Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday afternoon. Just back from Las Vegas to the friendly confines of New Orleans. Where is it more comfortable to be right now, Las Vegas or New Orleans, Andrew Lopez?
It depends on if you, what's your preference on humidity? I'd think I'd rather be home and sweating and have, you know, 98 degrees feel like 110 than be in the baking oven that is Las Vegas. Although I did get out of Las Vegas before, it's going to be like 118 this weekend. So I think I won. I don't know.
Tell me if you think what I'm about to say is insane. And I know that we talk about the NBA and we're now talking about weather, but you tell me if you think what I'm about to say is insane. As a veteran of many weeks spent in Las Vegas in July and August in my career covering Summer League and Team USA, I believe you can smell the heat. And what I mean by that is it gets so hot. There's something that comes off the concrete or the asphalt and I can smell. There's like a,
I think you're just smelling people's feet burning on the cement. I think that's all that is.
Okay. Well, I can't deny that possibility. So you were on the Victor Wembanyama beat for us in Las Vegas, your first experience with him, but you also were in San Antonio for practice. You were there for when he was introduced. So I think you may have exceeded. You now replaced me at ESPN for interviews and time around Victor. So before we talk about the Vegas week, I just want to know, what do you think of him? What's your impression of him? You've obviously probably heard a lot about him. Tell me what you think.
You know, as most like, you know, NBA nerds on Twitter, I've, you know, been following something about Victor since he was 15, 16 years old and watching clips and seeing exactly what he was going to do and how it was going to pan out. Watched. I remember, I think during the games in Vegas, the initial ones, the G League exhibition ones, when he played the Ignite and Scoot, I remember like there was a game that night that I had to cover. And I was like, I was very upset that I had to cover it because I think it might've been Zion in San Antonio. For one of his first preseason games back, honestly. But I remember like having to go back and like, no, I'm going to watch this full game as soon as I got back to the room that night and watching the second game and being so impressed and following him obviously throughout the season like most NBA fans have. But the thing that has jumped out to me in person, seeing everything that he has done since the draft, you know, throwing out the first pitch at the Yankees game, doing all the media, doing the subway and everything, it's just how poised he is for the amount of pressure that is being put on him. And I think he has talked about his parents and talked about his agents and everybody around him, his team, kind of mentally preparing him for what's to come. And I think I asked Pop about this at the post-draft availability where we talked to Pop, you know, right after the pick. And he again, great, you know, credited his parents for everything that they have done for him. It's just, he understands his place in the spotlight. I think we kind of saw a little bit about that even this past week with the Britney Spears situation of how he came out and handled that and talked about it right away. I think sometimes there's teams that probably would have not put him anywhere near a microphone 12 hours after.
We have
like
the video from that. I don't know what happened to her. The video that I saw was from the back. Her head like snapped back. I don't know what happened to her, but what I do know is that Victor had nothing to do with it. Right. I don't think he ever saw her. I don't think he knew it was Britney Spears. I don't know what she said, but I can say based on that video, Victor had nothing to do with it. But no. You're right. He did come out the next day and address it.
I mean, 14 hours later, he's in front of microphones talking about it and was very poised in how he handled that situation. He knows there's going to be a lot of pressure on him. He knows we've seen how he's dealt with pressure. You know, just that first game, 9-8, 2-for-13 from the field. And then he comes back and responds the way he does. And I think the poise and being prepared for the moment is kind of the thing that has stood out to me, other than the fact that like he's way up there. Like that's the other thing that you have to look for is the fact, look, I'm not buying 7.3, 225 on a roster. All right. I'm not buying 7.3 and a half.
Let me say this about his height, because I was saying 7.5 for months. I didn't make up 7.5. I was told 7.5. Okay. Victor announced he was 7.3. And when he was measured in bare feet, he came up at like 7.3 and 5/8, right?
Yeah.
So that would be 7.4 in bare feet.
That's 7.4 to me.
And in shoes, which is what NBA players are usually measured in.
And you know what? I'm pretty sure they usually play in those as well. So I think that might be key to measurement.
Yes. So I think he actually is 7.5 when he's out on the court, but for some reason, he doesn't want to be 7.5. He does not want to be 7.4. He wants to be 7.3. So people are now calling him 7.3 because that's what he wants. But, you know, one of the things that's strange is when you have guys who want to be shorter, like KG for years called himself 6'11". He wasn't. He was like 7'1". I think Durant is listed at 6'10". Jackson just pointed out to me. He's 7 foot. I think most people want to go taller, you know, like nobody in the NBA is very few people in the NBA are 6'9", because if you're 6'9", you call yourself 6'10". 6'10" sounds a lot better than 6'9".
Trey Murphy has said that before. He's 6'9 and a half, but he's like, I'm going to call myself 6'10" because who's going to say they're 6'9 and a half? He's like, nobody's going to say they're 6'9 and a half.
And if you're 6'9 and a half, you can call yourself 6'10", right?
Yeah, it's when you're 6'7 and a half and you try to call yourself 6'10".
Right. And there's a ton of guys out there listed at 7 feet that are not 7 feet.
Yeah.
Okay. But there are occasionally guys who want to be short. You remember like a couple of years ago, I'm going to say maybe it was 4 years ago, the NBA said they were going to remeasure everybody and give accurate heights.
Yep.
And like all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people lost an inch.
Yeah.
Except for LeBron gained an inch. He went from 6'8 to 6'9".
LeBron gained an inch. I think KD, that's when KD went from like 6'9 to 6'10".
Yeah,
there was a few. Yeah.
Maybe KD is actually 6'11", but whatever. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know,
but no, ahead. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, obviously, look, the height is right. And, you know, I stand next to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar the other day, and I know Kareem is older and he's a little hunched over, but he towers just over everybody and everything at all times. The funniest thing to me about the entire week in Vegas is when when you have the team huddle and everybody puts their hand up, you know, for the break and everybody kind of reaches high. Victor still reaches high. Like nobody's reaching you in the huddle, Victor. Like everybody's going to go straight up if they're going to meet you in the huddle. He's just puts his hand up high, gets, you know, for the break. And like, you just see this huddle of hands here. And then like Victor's is like way up here. It's like, come on, man. So that will look, that is obviously one thing, but again, the poise that he has shown, in interviews, the poise that he has shown just around, that has been to me the most impressive thing after watching him come over just right before the draft.
Yeah. I mean, he's been preparing for this for a long time, as you could imagine. It sounded in some interviews like he kind of was doing two things. He was practicing a little bit with the Spurs summer league team, but he didn't go with them to Sacramento.
Correct.
Sounded like he's been spending some time with the Spurs frontline guys. He didn't just go to dinner with Tim Duncan and Ginobili and
David Robinson,
Sean Elliott. He also may have been on the court with like Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell, et cetera. Did you get that impression that that's what was going on while the team was, the rest of the summer league guys were in Sacramento?
Yeah. I think he actually kind of slipped and said it. And I think it was that first interview. So Jeremy Sochan was I think stayed back. So he's been working out with those guys. And I think that was kind of part of like, when they went to California Classic, it was, hey, look, you guys go do that. I'm going to stay back, get settled in San Antonio, but let's work out with these guys, the guys who I'm going to be playing with, the guys who are going to be in the starting lineup with me, things like that. And I think that's probably what he needs to be doing here for the next, you know, 2 to 3 months. And I think that's what the plan is going to be. Is
the Spurs new facility opened yet?
Not yet, but it should be open for training camp. So he made a comment about, you know, I asked him after the game on Sunday, so the second game, you know, what are your plans? What are you going to do? And he's like, look, he's like, I got to figure out where we're practicing, if it's going to be in San Antonio, if it's going to be elsewhere, are we doing, you know, we're going to have like a little mini camp somewhere, I guess. So, and I think some of that is because the new facility is supposed to be open for training camp, but they're still putting the final touches on it and how long they're going to be there. So he's going to be putting in work for the next 2 to 3 months. And in fact, I think the word that he used, the phrase that he used was, you know, these next 2 to 3 months are going to be great for me and they're going to change my life. I mean, that's how he's looking at the time between now and the start of the regular season.
Let's have some mid-July practice facility talk here real quick. Because we are in the dead period. And Joe Cronin, the general manager of the Blazers, announced on Monday that it could be, quote, months and months before Dame Lillard is traded. So we can all go on vacation, Andrew. We'll see you in September.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. So the Spurs kind of set the standard for the modern practice facility when they opened their current one. Don't hold me to this, but I want to say it was like in 2003-ish, sometime in the early 2000s, maybe it was a year later, a year earlier, where they had this standalone facility that was, you know, some distance away from the center of town. And like with everything with the Spurs, a whole bunch of people came in and copied it. And so when new practice facilities went up over the whole NBA, teams started copying it, you know, and setting up these new facilities. And I could kind of go down the list of teams that have built new facilities, you know, that sort of are somewhat like the Spurs, or somebody would take it to the next level and then the Spurs would, or I mean, somebody would take it to the next level and they would copy that. But the Spurs kind of were the genesis of it all. And so over the course of the last decade, we've seen a majority of the NBA open facilities. I mean, I could go down the list and tell you some of them. You know, Chicago has a beautiful facility right next to the United Center.
Yes.
The Wolves opened a facility next door to the Target Center. Gorgeous facility. One of the cool things about the... Yeah, well, hold on about the Magic.
Oh, yeah.
the Wolves facility, part of what their facility is, used to be a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And they kept one of the theaters that they used to like as a big screening room. Like it's still a theater. Like they,
it's actually whatever. Really fun.
Yeah.
The Lynx also, you know, used that facility.
Yeah.
Right there in Minnesota as well. So that was nice because it's very much a, you know, the same thing there.
The Suns opened up one a couple of years ago. The Lakers and Clippers have opened up the new facilities within the last decade. I literally could go down the whole list. The Cavs opened one that was the class of the league in like 2006, 2007-ish. That's a little bit not quite the same, but that was it. You know, the 76ers opened a gorgeous facility in Camden and have a helipad there for when Josh Harris flies down from New York so he can land on top of the practice facility. I can go on and on about facilities. The Nets opened one in an old warehouse in Brooklyn. So we were, all that was happening. Okay. Then last year, the Orlando Magic raised the stakes and they opened up the, I've never seen it, but I've seen pictures of it. So you've seen it?
I've seen it. I've toured it. I've been in it.
Okay, go for it. Tell us about, right. I'm sorry, but this is not really about analyzing basketball, but I'm interested in it. So tough luck in mid-July. Go ahead.
So the one thing about the Magic facility, first of all, it is maybe a block and a half away from the Amway Center. So it's still very, very close. It is state-of-the-art everything. It is, it's more, and I think what we're going to start seeing, it's more about the lifestyle of and taking care of everything about the player rather than just here's two practice courts, here's a weight room, here's a very nice locker room. Now the kitchen facilities are being upgraded. There's, you can get your smoothies here. You can get your three meals a day if you want over here. Here's a family area that all your family can be in if you want. The locker rooms themselves, there's actual closets behind these lockers.
Right. The players have like little... Each player has a walk-in closet behind his locker. Is that correct in saying that?
That is 100% correct. I saw it and I was amazed. The actual training part is all state of the art. All of the medical needs you have, you need to get scanned. We're used to X-ray. Everything is in the building.
Yeah, one of the things that's happening, like the Hawks and the Wolves, and there may be more. They have an MRI center attached to their practice facility. So a player needs an MRI, he takes an elevator and gets an MRI.
Right. Yeah. It's everything about it was just top. I think it was like an altitude chamber, which I think more teams are starting to get into now, or room. And so it was by far the most impressive facility that I think I have seen. And I think, as you said, that bar is now being set. And everybody is going to start having to try to meet that.
So what I'm saying is, so I know I've gotten off topic here, but the Magic reset the standard and the Spurs are about to reset it again with this facility that's about to open. And teams are trying to mimic what the Dallas Cowboys did when they built, I think it's called the Star, north of Dallas. McMahon's not here. I can't remember the town that it's in, but like they built like a little Cowboys village.
Yeah.
And teams are trying to do that a little bit. The Raiders did something like that similar in Las Vegas. It's not quite the same. You know, the Cowboys are pretty unique in how they roll. But anyway, the Spurs, in addition to getting Victor Wembanyama, are about to reset the way they train. In fact, the night of the lottery in Paris, when Victor found out he was going to be a Spur, when everything calmed down and people were, settling down, and it was like 3:15 a.m.
I say like 3-4 in the morning. Probably.
I was telling Victor and his parents, I was like, well, wait till you see this facility. I was like almost like acting as an agent of the Spurs, like telling him like, hey, well, wait till you see the facility that they're. But anyway, yes, Victor will be. He is elected, to not play in the World Cup for the French, which was a real blow for them because the French are trying to win it.
Yeah.
The French won silver at the last two major competitions, the European Championships and the Olympics. They want to win it. They've got the Olympics in Paris next year. They want to win gold there. And Victor not playing was a blow. But he's not going to go back to France. He's going to stay in San Antonio and spend the rest of the summer, right?
Yeah, that's the plan. And I know when I talked to him about that, I asked him about that a couple of weeks ago, and he said he likened missing the World Cup to not playing an entire regular season with the Spurs. He's like, that's how it feels to me to miss an international competition. And that's the level of kid. Like he wants to win next year as well. I think everything he wants to do, coming off the full season in the French League, finishing the finals right before the draft. Obviously, skipping California Classic, doing two games in Vegas just to kind of get a little acclimated, but deciding to skip it was just so much basketball he was going to play. And I think some of that has to do with thinking about the Olympics and being and wanting to help the French try to win gold next year. So it was really a real tough decision for him, I think, to not play in this year's World Cup. But he also knows like there's other things I want to do. He keeps talking about how he wants to, you know, get his body ready to try and play an 82 game season. And you could see his conditioning in the first game against the Hornets the other night.
He looked genuinely tired at times.
And there a lot of his shots were short. Like there's a lot that he needs to do right now to kind of, you know, prepare himself and get ready. And I think that's what these next 2-3 months are going to be about, is staying in San Antonio, staying, you know, with the guys that he is going to be playing with this season, and trying to make sure he is in the best shape possible to do what he needs to do this season.
So when you were at practices, you were at various Spurs practices, both in San Antonio and in Vegas. Did you listen to what other players on the team or some of the other said about Victor, like what their impressions were?
So it's funny when we talked in San Antonio again, because these are still summer league practices. So we're not getting the Sohans, the, you know, the Keldon Johnsons, the Devin Vassell. Like we're not talking to them in the trade. We're not getting there yet. But like the Malachi Branhams, the Blake Wesleys, the, you know, the other rookies who were playing with him on the summer league team. Like the first one, I think it was Branham, who said like, yeah, the first thing I noticed was how big his hands were. Or one of them said how big his feet were. Like they're just as in awe, I think, as everybody else about how big Victor really is. And, you know, they started talking about, you know, it's going to be nice to throw him lobs. It's a very big catch radius that you have up there that you can kind of get to. So there, I think it might have been Blake talked about, you know, he doesn't have to jump to dunk it. Like there's layups where he's on his tiptoes, which is just, you know, it's just some insane things that he is able to do on the court. And I think we are just scratching the surface of seeing what he's going to be able to do on it.
By the way, Malachi Branham, second best player in the NBA from St. Vincent St. Mary High School, Akron, Ohio. Just in case you want to ever talk fighting in Irish basketball. We should have a round table with Malachi, me, and the guy who plays for the Lakers and talk, you know, Irish basketball history. I just want you to properly know.
Now I know.
Yes. I just want you to properly recognize. I don't know how many NBA players your high school has in their NBA right now, Andrew Lopez.
But... right now, that would be zero. Zero.
All right. Well, I can't help you. yeah. Okay. Branham actually looked not too bad in the summer league. I don't have a problem with Victor only playing 2 summer league games. He played deep into the season. I, you know, it was interesting. I think the NBA tried to dangle out a little bait because they're playing the Wizards in game 3 and the Wizards have Bilal Coulibaly, his teammate. So like, I think when they made the schedule, they knew that Victor was going to play probably 2 games. And so, you know, they had him play Brandon Miller in game 1 and it was going to be a Scoot in game 2. Scoot got hurt his shoulder. And I think they were saying, well, maybe if we just stick Coulibaly in game 3, maybe Victor will be tempted. And, he passed on it. So, but anyway, I don't have a problem with it. You know, one of the things about this summer league, there's not a lot of juice coming out of this summer league, probably partially because Henderson and Amen Thompson got hurt.
Yeah.
I was just texting with a personnel guy today and he was like, this is like the quietest summer league, you know, in terms of juice, in a long time. So, and that's the thing, like after the first 4 or 5 days of summer league, like I think it's Tuesday, we're like day 5 right now, day 4 or 5.
Yeah.
We see a downward trajectory in terms of, you know, all the players who were there sitting courtside, they'll go home, you know, just like any Vegas trip after 4 days, that's enough. And
it's going to feel lonely. I think Larry Nance is staying, you know, throughout, but it's because his younger brother Pete is playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I feel like Larry's going to be sitting by himself on like courtside come like Thursday and Friday.
So
all the other guys have been like, "All right, we got our first weekend, we're out."
Somebody I know sent me a photo of Larry sitting courtside the other day, and he was wearing
Pete's
jersey that had his number, which I think is 22, which also was Dad's number, mm-hmm. and Nance on the back. And they were like, "Is Larry seriously wearing his own jersey?" And I'm like, no, he's wearing his brother's jersey, but he is wearing a jersey that says Nance.
Nance, yeah. He is, so, it is at 22 and Nance. It just happens to say Northwestern. Because I'm pretty sure it was his Northwestern jersey. It wasn't even.
I think Pete it was. But I couldn't. You couldn't see the front. You could just see the back.
So yeah. So Pete actually, what Pete? He did his 4 years in Northwestern and then finished UNC. So he was wearing his Northwestern jersey that day.
Another Akron, Ohio NBA product. I don't. I can't help you.
Wow.
I can't help you, Andrew Lopez, if your town ain't producing NBA dudes like this. So wow. I can't.
Who do we have right now?
Malachi Branham is from Columbus, but he went to school in Akron. That's all, you know, that's why we
claim. Oh, that's all that matters then. You just claim him.
That's right.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Okay, I wanted to ask you also about the Pelicans. You live in New Orleans, cover the Pelicans. We've had an interesting summer. How would you phrase what happened with the Pelicans and Zion this summer?
A lot of things have happened with Zion this summer, but it has been
non-female companion division.
Yeah, for as Zion. Far as the actual basketball, there was one, I think, kind of maybe somewhat significant move in just what they have done with Z is when the Pels decided to get rid of Teresa Weatherspoon, who was Zion's kind of PD coach the last few years. And I think it had nothing to do with relationships or you know, with, I mean, how her relationship with Z and how they were developing or anything like that. It was just more of a staff and personnel issue where Willie Green, when Willie Green was brought in, remember, he was brought in right after Stan Van Gundy was here for 1 year in New Orleans. And a lot of that staff ended up just staying the same. So when Willie really started, I think he was really maybe only able to bring in one or two guys of his own to be on the staff. I think a lot of we're still kind of holdovers. And I think this is just kind of a natural progression in him, you know, being able to get more people on the staff.
I mean, right, I'll just say what it is. You know, when he was hired, his reputation as a head coach was not established. He was sort of I don't want to say weak, because you would never call Willie weak, but he didn't possess, extraordinary leverage. And therefore did not have as much control over his staff. And this is not unique to New Orleans. And after doing a pretty good job the first 2 years, Willie has established himself and frankly is a stronger positional, you know, he's got more say and more strength and he has more leverage and he's getting to call more shots on who's on his staff. And I presume that he was ready to make a change in that regard. I think
And there's been a few more changes, but they brought in James Borrego this year, which is kind of a big move for them. And Borrego actually has a very good relationship with Willie. He was an assistant coach the 1 year Willie Green was in New Orleans. Then he was an assistant coach in Orlando where Willie Green spent his final year and actually was, I think, playing a 34, 35-year-old Willie Green down the stretch when he took over as the interim coach in Orlando because of how much he trusted Willie. So now Borrego's kind of in to run the offense a little bit here for the Pels this year. He's got, you know, Jaren Collins, who interviewed with, you know, Detroit for that job and was a candidate before they decided to make Monty an offer that Monty couldn't refuse to go to Detroit. So it's slowly building up the staff kind of in the way he wants. And I think that was kind of one thing. And I think they brought Z in to tell him that news face to face rather than let him find out on social, which I think was kind of, it shows you the, you know, how they want to look. This is something that we know means something to you. We don't want that to be something you find out on social or something you find out from somebody else. So they brought him in for that. He has been at the facility more than what he has been in the past. And that's somewhat of a byproduct of before. He's kind of, when he has been in New Orleans in the summer, he works out on his own. That's just how he has done stuff. Sometimes he'll go spend a month or something before the season elsewhere. And he's been around just a little bit more. I think he just got to Vegas yesterday. So yeah, pretty sure he got to Vegas on Monday night. So he has, you know, it's still going to be a lot about getting him right. They've also made a change in the, and this is not necessarily exactly have to do just with Zion, but they have made a change in their training staff. Aaron Nelson, who was much heralded when they brought him over from Phoenix, is now shifting to a different role. He's going to be not around as much. So they're going to take a different approach with some of the training stuff. And that was something that David Griffin talked about at the end of the year. They had to look at a lot of different things with how they were doing stuff. It wasn't just a Brandon Ingram issue. It wasn't just a Zion Williamson issue, but it is a lot still going on. And I think Z kind of made a little pop-up surprise appearance on I think it was Gilbert Arenas's podcast on Monday night and talked about he's working now.
Yeah, what'd you think about that?
I thought it was interesting that they got him to sit down for 10 minutes and talk about the diet and the training stuff. And, you know, Z said, look, I'm a hooper. This is what I want to do. I'm not the guy who's out here trying. I'm not trying to intentionally miss games. I am hurt. But what are you doing to fix that? And he talked about the flexibility stuff. And he talked about, the blueprint that LeBron has given about, you know, the flexibility and the band work and doing all that kind of stuff. And I thought he was very candid with the diet stuff about, he mentioned the, you know, you feel like you have this invincibility trait of like, I'm, you know, nothing can stop me. I'm 19, I'm 20. I can do whatever I want. I can eat whatever I want. And he said, when you're that age and you have all the money in the world, it's hard. And I think he has had to deal with that. And I do think right now, I'm very interested to see if what has happened this summer from the off the court perspective is going to have a major effect on him on the court in a positive fashion, whereas it's going to make him lock in a little more, responding to the kind of the embarrassing nature of what has happened, and, you know, see where that goes. But I thought he was candid in the brief time he was there, and that was good to see from him, that he's not going to shy away from you know, talking about stuff like that in you know, in certain settings.
Yeah, so the Pelicans are a team that is one of the more fascinating teams. They kick the tires on Scoot Henderson. Who knows what they really, if they ever made a real offer. I talk about this on the pod repeatedly. Offer is a sensitive topic in the NBA. And I understand why, because you're worried about players. I don't know how serious they got with Charlotte and Portland. I know they talked to him.
It's my understanding that it was a very much a pick-based offer more than anything else. Or not even offer. Let me not use that word offer, like you just said. It was a picks-based discussion. The Pelicans have all of their own picks, you know, for the next 7 years. They have the Lakers deferment pick that they could defer to 2025 as a couple of unprotected Milwaukee Bucks picks. And it was, if you want that, we can have the discussions, and it didn't go much further, but it was mostly pick based, from what I
right. Well, you're not getting the number two or three pick in this draft by offering future firsts,
right?
So, if that's what they only were willing to talk about, then they were never getting it, and they didn't get it. So, but you know, whatever. It has been who knows how many times this has been said in New Orleans. They were the number two seed before Zion got hurt. They have.
I've said it a lot. I know that much.
Right. They got Herb Jones done this offseason. They didn't pick up the option to lock him into the 4-year contract, which I liked because Herb Jones is a high quality player. They are flirting with the tax for the first time ever.
Yes, they are.
I would be reasonably surprised, if not outright shocked, if they were a tax-paying team. So I suspect if they're going to go any way, it would be to reduce payroll going forward, but I don't know for sure. but they will be, in theory, starting the season healthy. Brandon Ingram is playing for Team USA in the World Cup. He's going to be one of their best players. I expect him to have a pretty big role. Wing scorer who can shoot from the perimeter. That's like gold. I mean, Kevin Durant is, in most people's view, the greatest Team USA player of all time, in terms of his accomplishments and the volume of accomplishments. There's some guys who have tremendous cases for that, you know, Carmelo being right up there, but I think it's Durant. And Brandon Ingram is cut from the same cloth as Durant. He's not Durant, but he's, you know, that type of player. And so that type of player is extraordinarily valuable in that setting. So he, you know, I would assume would be coming into camp in good condition, in good shape, coming off that experience. Do you believe that the Pelicans can get back to that level that they were at, you know, assuming Zion is able to play?
I do, and it's still just a lot about health. And I think everything comes down to health. They traded for CJ McCollum, you know, 18 months ago, or whatever it is now. And in that half of season and then all of last year, he has played in 10 games with Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. Obviously, Z missed the...
I mean, I know you've said that stat several times, but it still halts you.
172 minutes, 10 games, plus 60 in those 172 minutes. Again, small sample size theater for what they've actually been on. But the fact that it's been 10 games since, you know, February 2022 is kind of alarming. It's always about health with this team, and it has been, and it will continue to be about health. If they are healthy, if this is a healthy team, then yeah, I do feel like they can compete. I mean, they had a stretch there in December, and even during that stretch in December when they it was like a 4 or 5 game stretch where they beat Denver here in New Orleans. Then they had the two Phoenix games. That was, you know, one of the ones where with the Zion windmill at the end of the game against Phoenix, and he made the comment about, you know, they eliminated my team. I felt some kind of way. And, you know, they flirted with being first in the West at that point. But Brandon wasn't even playing in those games. You know, Brandon had hurt his toe the end of November. In December might have been the best I'd seen this team look. You had Trey Murphy in the starting lineup. You know, he was shooting great. And I think there's just, if you can figure out the health situation, you can take a step. I know one of the things that Griff has talked about, David Griffin, is, you know, getting some rim protection for this team, for a team that was still, what, sixth or seventh in defense last year. You know, they still finished pretty high.
The reason they were able to even mildly stay afloat was because they defended. And that's really, I mean, that's because they have, you know, good perimeter defenders. And that's also because Willie Green is a coach that has high standards, and that, you know, it can help carry the day even when they've been decimated by injuries.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why they actually, I mean, we talk about the Zion injury, another injury that hurt them down the stretch. I talk about, you know, he wasn't maybe, you know, very, he wasn't 100% down the stretch of the season, but they missed Jose Alvarado a lot in the last big month time and a half of the year. They missed Jose a lot. And I remember we went up to, you know, spoke briefly with Jose in Vegas, and he's like, look, I'm back. I'm back. He was hyped. And I think, talk about another guy who's going to have a big role in the World Cup. Jose is going to be there with Puerto Rico, and think he's going to come into the season, you know, feeling pretty good and feeling, you know, that he's got to make up a little bit for lost time, not being there last month and a half of the season or whatever it was. But I think what you see is the health is there. You see the vision. And Griff has talked about rim protection, but, you know, so if they could still maybe try to do a deal, and I think the easiest route to that is some sort of JV or Kyra Lewis combination. That's really the only thing that kind of gets you to, I guess, maybe the money that you would like to be at, or and then still being able to stay below the tax, if you're going to stay below the tax once the season starts. So it's, I thought they would make more moves this offseason. I didn't think they would essentially just try to run it back. I mean, all they've really done is replace, you know, Josh Richardson leaves. You replace him with Jordan Hawkins, your number 14 pick. You let Jackson Hayes and Willie Hernan Gomez walk. You replace you know, one of those with Cody Zeller on a minimum deal. And then I think EJ Liddell, you upgraded from a two-way contract to a full contract. And I honestly, I think if EJ Liddell doesn't tear his ACL, I think probably a year ago, either today or tomorrow, somewhere in there, because it was later in summer league. If he doesn't tear his ACL, he probably has a contract spot last year. Maybe he's not on a two-way. But I think, I mean, that's really all you've done. And running it back is not a terrible idea, but I still thought they would have made another move for rim protection. But, I mean, if you can just keep guys from getting to the rim, then maybe, which was part of what their defensive scheme was, and just try to, you know, force guys away. You know, we'll see what works. But I was a little surprised they haven't done that move. I think they were maybe kind of still taking some phone calls. So I'll try to see if something can work there. But I still think you're in a good spot. But again, it all comes on health. And health has just been such a big issue for this team. They are making some moves in that department. Other moves that are kind of still going on right now to strengthen the training staff. But it's just going to come down to health, and it's going to come down to the health of number one and the health of number 14 about where this team's going to go.
Right. So they do have the expiring contract of Jonas Valanciunas, which is $15 million, and those draft picks. They have a selection of young players, Dyson Daniels. There's interest in him. He was a top 10 pick a year ago. Trey Murphy would be one of the most valuable players in trade that they could even have. I mean, people would crawl all over themselves to get Trey Murphy if they ever, you know, they actually are in position to make a competitive offer on a significant player because of those picks that they have, because of a couple of young players they have, and because of the expiring contract of Valanciunas if they keep to it. So the thing is, though, I just don't see him going into the tax. So it would have to be done that. So, but we'll see for sure. All right, Andrew, thank you for coming on. We're trying to keep something to talk about as we go into the dead days of the season. And I appreciate you. I appreciate our producers, Jackson and Bruce. Thanks for listening to Loop Collective. We'll talk to you soon.